This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On Saturday, the people of Afghanistan voted in that country's first ever presidential election. UN officials report a higher than expected turnout as Afghans waited on long lines. Some stood for hours in rain and snow. The country's previous rulers, the Taliban, proved unable to disrupt the vote. Official results aren't expected for weeks. The counting is not yet underway because many ballots from remote areas have yet to arrive at designated counting centers on donkey back. But while many observers hailed the turnout and the obvious enthusiasm of the Afghan electorate, there was controversy. Supposedly indelible ink used to stain voters' fingers so they could not vote again turned out to be pretty easy to rub off. On Saturday, 15 presidential candidates boycotted the poll and declared the election illegitimate. After a flurry of diplomatic activity, an independent commission to investigate allegations of fraud has been established, and several candidates have now withdrawn their objections and agreed to abide by the commission's findings. Later in the program, we'll look inside the American bubble in Baghdad, the Green Zone. But first, the Afghan election. If you have questions about its significance, whether an elected president will be considered legitimate, about the vote's effect on the Taliban or on Afghanistan's neighbors, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from Kabul, Afghanistan, is Peter Bergen. He's the author of Holy War Incorporated, Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden. He was, of course, in Afghanistan while the elections took place this weekend. Peter, good to have you back on the program.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Update us on the latest issues involving the controversy. As I understand it, Hamid Karzai's most prominent rival today withdrew his rejection.
Yeah, I mean, the ink thing may have turned out to be a tempest in an ink pot, as it were. Obviously, the fact that this indelible ink was very easy to remove seemed problematic at first, but a lot of the candidates have dropped basically said, we will stand by the results of the independent inquiry, which is now going forward. On the positive side with this ink thing, I was out in Gardez, which is basically on the border with Pakistan, and also Logar, which is south of Kabul, and this ink problem was sort of pretty endemic everywhere, and other people that I talked to, it seemed to be a problem everywhere, which is sort of good in a sense because the problem is equally helpful or unhelpful for all the candidates. It's sort of a wash, as it were. And I think that when you saw the sort of immense enthusiasm of the people taking part in this vote, happiness certainly is one word, but even joy in some of the people that I saw voting in Gardez, which is traditionally a very Pashtun area with pro-Taliban sympathies. I think that a lot of the politicians saw this and the huge turnout and the atmosphere really of excitement around this, and they realized that it would be better basically to drop their objections and go with the independent inquiry, which is moving forward.
And who's on this commission?
Well, actually, it's a relatively small group of people. I met one of the just this evening. I met one of the people involved. He said there's maybe two or three people that would be involved in doing this. They're going to look at certain returns from certain provinces and see if there's any, particularly problematic areas. But I suspect the answer will be that this was a sort of universal problem that affected every candidate the same way. And of course, Karzai was winning. The opinion polls that were taken in the summer showed Karzai ahead of every candidate in three different opinion polls taken this summer. And in fact, just now there have also been exit polls by the International Republican Institute, which is a nonpartisan group with affiliations with the Republican Party in the United States. But they are regarded as a reliable source on this, and their exit polls indicate that Hamid Karzai is really winning in a landslide. And also, I mean, parenthetically, Neil, I spoke to dozens of people on Saturday during the election, and those people who volunteered what they were voting, almost without exception, said Karzai, because they really regard him as a candidate who can bring peace and stability to the country.
Over many months, the Taliban had voted to disrupt these elections and vowed to bring wide-scale violence on Election Day. In fact, what happened?
It was a total dud. I mean, I was in the one place, as it happens, where there was violence. It was very ineffectual. A rocket was launched at the polling center in Gardez, and it fell short by about a kilometer. It destroyed a demining organization's house, but it didn't have to kill anybody, and it had zero effect on people voting. And that story was repeated around the country. There were a lot of people who were arrested in the last few days, a group of people in Kandahar, some Pakistanis who were driving a fuel truck and also with explosives, which obviously would have been a potentially quite a difficult thing if it had blown up, but they were arrested. And also people in Kabul, people using diplomatic bags to bring explosives into the city, according to local police here. But the security was very tight in the places that I went to, and it seems to have yielded benefits, and the Taliban have sort of cried wolf on this one, and I think it'll be hard to really take their threats very seriously in the future.
In many ways, this election is about legitimacy. There are people who would be contesting this election no matter what happened. First of all, is the issue of the ink likely to give them a greater weight to their objections to this election? And the other question involves the Taliban. They were pretending still to be the legitimate government of Afghanistan. What is this due to their pretensions?
Well, I think on the latter thing, an even partially successful election will destroy any claims that they have to legitimacy in terms of the Taliban. I think on the ink problem, I think that there were a number of opposition candidates were looking for kind of an excuse. They've thrown up a number of other issues, Pakistani kind of interference with the election, which sort of a non-issue, and a couple of other sort of technical problems. The ink is a legitimate question, but it seems now, as you pointed out in the lead-in, that since all the principal opposition candidates have dropped their objections and have all agreed to go with whatever the conclusion of the independent inquiry, I think that we'll find that the independent inquiry will do its business in the next week or 10 days, say that this ink problem didn't substantially affect the results of the election in any meaningful way. And we will have some sort of, maybe 5 days from now, we'll have a sense of who is who's winning this. The final results won't be tabulated for perhaps 2.5 to 3 weeks because some of these areas are so remote that donkeys are bringing the ballot boxes in. Mm-hmm.
And just to clarify, if this commission, as I understand it, made up from outsiders, I think a Canadian, a Swede, one other person, but if this commission finds that this ink problem was throughout the country, that's one thing, bad ink. If it's found that it's only in certain areas, they might then be suspected of allowing supporters of one party or another to vote multiple times.
Right. I mean, and I think just based on anecdotally, hearing that I've, in the last 2 days that I've bumped into, this thing was so universal that it's not, if indeed, as you say, that it was only in certain areas, then that would raise some issues. But, whoever did this ink, I mean, the UN spent $200 million on this election, and to screw up such a basic thing as this ink thing, somebody should definitely lose their job. Everything else went so swimmingly, it's rather tragic that this one thing, which, if you go to a bar or a nightclub in the United States and they stamp your hand, it takes days for it to come off sometimes. So it's not like it's such a technically difficult thing. They just, for some reason, they just didn't get this one thing right.
Now let's get some questions from callers. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We'll begin with Aaron, who's on the line with us in Dover, New Hampshire.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It appears that people are saying the elections may, the success in Afghanistan may help the president's campaign, and I was wondering your opinions about how appropriate it will be for the president to attribute the apparent success in Afghanistan to his political decisions and what America's role was.
Now, obviously, speaking of President Bush's election campaign there.
Yes.
Peter, go ahead.
Well, the fact is it is a success. I mean, I'm not taking a partisan position here. I'm just saying this is a partial success. I think the situation here could be much, much better if more attention and resources had been put into Afghanistan earlier. With a relatively small amount of money, we're talking about, $2 or $3 billion of U.S. Aid. We've had this partially successful election, it seems. We're spending $1 billion every 3 days in Iraq, $1 billion in Afghanistan will go a very long way. The entire economy of the country is something like $5 billion in any given year. So, you know, I think things could have done better here, but I think President Bush will be able to say that this was a success. I mean, that's just a fact.
Aaron, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Victor. Victor's calling from Boston. Victor?
Yes.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. My question is this. How come our guy that we always pick up, in this case, Mr. Karzai, he comes in as supposed to be temporarily to govern, and then he ends up being president? That seems to be always repeats itself. In the past, it's going to repeat itself in Iraq with Mr. Al-Awlaki. You know, he was with the CIA for 25 years. How can we... I myself have a hard time thinking these are legitimate elections. Our man, I can bet my money that our man is going to win all the time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that for me, thank you.
Thank you very much, Victor. So, Peter, the United States Hamid Karzai is the U.S. guy in Kabul. Did Afghans raise questions about this during the election?
Well, let me make a counterpoint, which is Ahmed Shalabi was our guy supposedly in Iraq, and he was polling at numbers below Saddam Hussein, which is quite a trick after the fall of Saddam Hussein, 3% or so. And the fact is that Shalabi doesn't have any political future in Iraq, whereas Karzai is a genuinely popular figure here. You know, the fact that Karzai is a United States man doesn't necessarily mean that he isn't popular here. And in poll after poll, we've seen he surprisingly, not surprisingly, he just is popular because he's seen as the right man to bring stability to the country.
Let's go now to Scott. Scott's calling from San Francisco.
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Scott.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the speaker could briefly talk about is there real ideological differences between between the various different warlords that are fighting for power, or is it more of a grab for the available control of these different ethnic groups?
So is it regional, ethnic, linguistic, whatever? Go ahead, Peter.
I think it's basically all about, you know, local power. And, you know, Afghanistan has never had a strong central government. That may be about to change. I mean, I think Karzai is going to do the following thing. A number of people I spoke to during the election process said, we don't want Karzai to have a coalition government. We're sick of coalitions where there are all these competing ethnic groups and different interests. We want a sort of strong leader. And that's why we're voting for Karzai. And in fact, if you look at what Karzai has done in the run up to the election period, he basically fired Ismail Khan, who was the warlord. Well, warlord, of course, is a very loaded term, but let us say the regional power in western Afghanistan in Iraq. He basically fired him. He also dropped Marshal Fahim from his ticket, who was the warlord from the Panjshir Valley. So already, Karzai, even before the election, was moving to basically really emasculate these kinds of guys who can put out their own private militias. And I think we're going to see more of that after the election. Basically, when the new government comes along, everybody who has a cabinet position in the Afghan government may well lose their job. So I think we're going to see Karzai, if he does indeed win this election, which I think seems very probable, making some strong moves to really have a kind of national unification government that isn't so responsive to the so-called warlords.
Scott, thank you. Scott calling from San Francisco. Stay with us, Peter. We've got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls about the election in Afghanistan. Our number, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the first ever presidential election in Afghanistan held this past weekend. You can call in with your questions about the significance of the vote, its impact on Afghanistan and on neighboring countries. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated and a fellow at the New America Foundation here in Washington. He's on the line with us from Kabul. And Peter, when you were last on this program talking about the Afghan elections, you said that in a way, the yet to happen local elections come, I think, April, are in a way even more important than what we saw this past weekend.
I think that's right. Because, I mean, they were actually very smart. At one point, the elections, the local elections, the presidential elections were going to be held at the same time. They separated them. I think that was very smart, have a semi-successful presidential election, then move to the local elections, which are potentially much more problematic because, as I indicated earlier in the program, you know, Afghanistan has never been a centralized state. Local power is very important, and the really contentious issues are perhaps at the local level. So I think by moving this thing in the other parliamentary elections to April, that was quite a smart move. Of course, we'll see if those go relatively well when they come.
Let's get another caller now. Bonnie is on the line with us from Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes, thank you. During the run-up to the election, we read a lot in the newspapers about the rural areas being essentially uncontrollable, and Hamid Karzai was just the mayor of Kabul, that there was a good turnout of women registering to vote, but when it actually came to election day, that men would forbid their wives to vote. I would like to know what the actual voter turnout for women in Afghanistan as a whole was, and also in the more religiously fundamentalist rural areas, what was the turnout there for women?
Well, we can't answer that. I can't answer that, you know, definitively right now because the poll, you know, the count is still happening. But I can tell you from just my own experience, I went to Gardez, which is one of the most conservative cities in Afghanistan, where, you know, you don't see any women in the main bazaar at all, not even veiled women. And I can tell you that there are a stream of women coming into the central polling station in Gardez. I saw also in Logar province, I went to a local polling station, 700 women had voted. So I think you'll find that the notion that women didn't vote or wouldn't be allowed to vote, I think, is basically wrong. Of course, some women never registered to vote because either, in some of these areas, these women live in strict purdah, which means they really don't leave their houses. And unless an election worker came to their house to register them, then they didn't register. But I think that we'll find that the number of women who did vote is pretty high. After all, in some areas, you've seen more than 50% of women who had registered. So the question of the violence in the rural areas that was supposed to disrupt the election, that never happened.
Yes. So, well, it's a good beginning anyway.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Exactly.
Thank you.
To get a sense about what Afghans are saying about this election, we turn now to Shahir Zaheen. He's the founder and director of the Kilid Media Group, which launched Radio Kilid Kabul, Afghanistan's first talk radio program, about a year ago. Mr. Zaheen joins us now from the studios of Radio Kilid Kabul in Afghanistan. Good to have you on the program.
Hello. Good evening.
Can you tell us what your callers have been saying about the election?
I think it was a great experience for all Afghans. It was an exceptional experience for all those like myself who have seen Western countries and regional countries where people were voting, and we were all time looking to that day that we could experience in Afghanistan the same kind of experience that we go and vote and decide for our future by voting. The high participation, very high number of participation of men and women. You must understand that 42% of the registered people were women. And there has been a very high level of participation of women everywhere in the country. We have been following this on Radio Kilid live, from Herat to Kandahar to Jalalabad to Ghazni to different places of Afghanistan. In Bamiyan, women were in queue, 200 women in queue for 3 hours waiting for voting under the snow.
Hmm.
This was an amazing experience, and it was also a signal to all those people who wanted to force us to accept their rule of the warlords, the extremists, the Afghan vote to say no to them also.
On Election Day, as you mentioned, you were able to broadcast reports from around the country. I understand that it was one of your reporters who was first to break the news of the issue of the indelible ink that didn't turn out to be indelible.
Yes, it was at 7:45, one of our female reporters from the 15th district of Kabul announced that people were very surprised to see their finger that was supposed to have an ink that was indelible be washed, and they were able more or less to vote again if there was a chance for them. So she called first, and then we verify in different places, and some of the vote polling stations, there was this problem. So we did a survey, and it was near a third of the polling station in the places where we had the reporter, we had this problem. So we called the GMB, the Giant Election Monitoring Board, and then they tried to replace the ink. And but if you follow from the news, international news, there have been such a long queue to the polling stations that anyone who wanted to vote a second time, he was obliged to wait hours and hours. So it was not after 2 hours this problem of ink was removed. So I think the issue that it was done of the ink that was indelible and later on it was not that indelible is not that important issue. The biggest issue was the participation of all men and women Afghans to say no to those who wanted to force them to live under the rule of the guns.
Shahir Zaheen, thank you very much. Shahir Zaheen is founder and director of the Khalid Media Group, which launched Radio Khalid Kabul, Afghanistan's first talk radio program, about a year ago, and he was kind enough to join us from the stations of the radio station, the studios of the radio station in Kabul. Still with us is Peter Bergen. Joining us now is Ahmed Rashid, who just returned from Kabul, a correspondent for the Far Eastern Economic Review, the author of Jihad, The Rise of Militant Islam in Central Asia. That's his most recent book. He's with us by phone now from his home in Pakistan, and it's good to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
I understand you had a chance to meet with Interim President Karzai over the weekend. Is he at all worried about the controversy about this election?
No, he was very, very proud that there were all the misgivings about the election were proven false, that there was such a large turnout, that there was no violence, that women voted in such large numbers. I was with him on the campaign trail the week before when we went by helicopter out of Kabul, and you know, he went to a gathering, and there, and his main message there was that you should vote. You don't have to vote for me, but you should vote, and don't be scared of voting. And I think, you know, it was a very big relief to him on voting day that, as Shahir said, I mean, it was such an enormous experience for Afghans. I think on this ink issue, we should remember that this was really not the fault of the Afghans. This was very much the fault of the United Nations team, which was preparing this election. I noticed this very early on also at about 7:30 in the morning. What was so obvious that these polling kits that the UN had prepared for each polling station, which included everything like ballot boxes and ballot slips and pens and markers, nothing was labeled. These objects had all come from all over the world, and they should have had labels on each object in the local language, Dari or Pashto, explaining that what this item was for. And they were not labeled. So there were a number of marker pens and inks. So although they had been trained, these people, the polling agents, there was not labels on them. And if they had been insufficiently trained, they probably couldn't remember exactly, you know, which pen was for what.
So as this goes ahead, I assume that people who want to question the legitimacy of this election will have an issue over which to use. But in general, do you think the Afghan people, presuming that this commission does its work, will accept the legitimacy of this election?
Yes, I mean, you know, even at the end, even by midday when the opposition candidates had announced a boycott, and I was still going around the polling stations, there was a lot of anger amongst Afghans who'd heard this on the radio and was said, I mean, what are they boycotting for? I mean, you know, we're all standing here and voting, and we are still going to, you know, vote for them, not necessarily for Karzai. So, in fact, you know, I think Afghans generally were quite annoyed at this position taken by some of the opposition candidates. And I think, you know, in retrospect, it has become very clear that many of these opposition candidates were looking for an excuse to be able to create problems in this election. And, you know, the ink issue really provided them with a master hand, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email question, and I think this is more to you, Ahmed Rashid, than to you, Peter Bergen, because you're still in Afghanistan. Rick in Kelowna, Iowa, writes, I'm curious as to whether Arab satellite channels are covering this Afghan election and if the joy and excitement of the people is being communicated to the Arab and Muslim world. You've gone back to Pakistan, so at least you've gotten some idea of the coverage. Ahmed Rashid?
Yes, I mean, certainly Arab journalists were there. I haven't seen any of the coverage myself, but certainly, you know, this event was being carried.
What do you think the effect of this is going to be on countries around Afghanistan, and principally the country you're in right now, Pakistan?
Well, I think it's going to have a huge impact. I think the fact is that, you know, we're living in a region where most of the regimes are dictatorial, authoritarian. We have a military president who, in fact, today has been able to extend both his presidency and the wearing of the uniform of the Army Chief of Staff. And when President Musharraf went for a referendum 2 years ago, he only allowed one candidate to stand. In Afghanistan, there were 17 candidates standing for president. In Central Asia, I think the same thing. I mean, you've got five regimes which are holdovers from the Soviet system in the five Central Asian republics, and I think they've been looking very nervously at this Afghan election. If you remember, just a few months ago, there was what was called the Rose Revolution in Georgia, where there was a free election held, a president was elected. Now you have the same thing happening in a country like Afghanistan, which most Central Asians have always viewed as very backward, ridden by Islamic fundamentalism, Taliban, and now Afghanistan is proving to be more democratic than the Central Asian state. So I think, you know, there will be a ripple effect in the Arab world also, where of course you also have a lot of authoritarian regimes. And I think, I mean, the fact is that yes, the war on terror, the American presence, the international presence, all that, you know, can be excused, as it were, as to why these elections are taking place. But when you look at the turnout and when you look at the lack of violence and the public participation, I think that is the strongest message going out to regimes in this region.
We're talking about the Afghan elections this past weekend with Ahmed Rashid, a correspondent for the Far Eastern Economic Review, and Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's bring a caller in. Brian is with us from Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, hi. It seems like even if the elections have been successful, I would guess that the long-term success of democracy depends, especially in a historically non-democratic country, on a viable economy. And my understanding is that Afghanistan historically has relied very much on heroin production. Is there any thought of the panel that the new government is likely to find a new source of economic viability? And if not, how are they planning, you think, to reconcile that with Western desires?
Peter Bergen, why don't we start with you?
Well, you know, I mean, if you talk to either, you know, General Bano, who's a U.S. military commander here, or Dr. Abdullah, the foreign minister, they both say the same thing, which is this drug economy is potentially the greatest threat to stability. Who is profiting from this is not clear. The GDP of Afghanistan is maybe $5 billion. You're looking at 40% of it coming from the opium and the heroin trade. And in the long term, that is a potentially very devastating threat to Afghanistan's stability. Quite what you do about it is a question above my pay grade.
Ahmed Rashid.
Yes, Peter's absolutely right. I mean, it's an issue that is obsessing the government and the international community. President Karzai told me that it's the number one issue if he gets elected and if he forms a new government. He's going to create a drug czar, which is going to try and coordinate all the activities of both the government and the international community. It's a huge problem. And this year's production, which the figures of which still have to be announced, are actually more even than last year's production. The British government has the lead in this, and I spoke to the British. They're trying to get much, you know, obviously one country is not capable of taking control of dealing with everything from interdiction to alternative crops for farmers, to training Afghan commando forces and anti-drugs judges and prosecutors who can take the big guys to court. The issue really has been that the international community has not been united on this. The American troops, for example, have not got a permission to interdict drug shipments or convoys, even though they may be passing right below their bases. NATO troops suffer under other kinds of restrictions. You don't have a coordinated international response to help the Afghan government do this. Every country is doing its own thing at the moment, and I think that's what is needed more than anything at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Brian, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And we just have about a minute or so left. I did want to bring you in, Ahmed, on this question of the failure of the Taliban to live up to their promises to disrupt this election and cause widespread violence. What does that mean for the future, do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, this election is going to be a watershed for the Taliban. I think their failure, and first of all the promises that they made that they would disrupt this election, and then their failure, is a message that has gone down to the Afghan people very, very strongly. I think the Taliban are much weaker than before. I think many Taliban are realizing that the political process is now well underway in Afghanistan, and it's better they be part of it rather than outside it and fighting. I think also, of course, a lot of the security that was taken for the elections helped prevent any attacks. But there's a very strong political message here for the Taliban, which I think, you know, is going to have an enormous impact. And I think, you know, the Taliban are already quite divided amongst various factions. And I think this election and what to do next, as it were, for them is probably going to divide them further.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it. Ahmed Rashid, a correspondent for the Far Eastern Economic Review, joining us by phone from Lahore in Pakistan. And Peter Bergen, thanks to you as well. Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated, joined us by phone from Kabul. When we come back, William Longavisha on the Green Zone in Baghdad. This is NPR News.